This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In Fresh Air critic Ken Tucker's book about what he loves and hates about television, he singles out the WB series Gilmore Girls as having one of the best mothers in TV history. The series is about a single mother and her teenage daughter who are best friends. My guest, Amy Sherman Palladino, created the series, is an executive producer, and has written many of the episodes. Gilmore Girls is popular for its relationships, its witty, fast-paced dialogue, and its constant references to popular culture. The mother in Gilmore Girls, Lorelai Gilmore, got pregnant when she was 16, decided to have the baby, and not marry the father. Although she's lucky to have a great relationship with her daughter, Rory, she never had a good relationship with her own parents. They're wealthy, and Lorelai thinks of them as snobbish and selfish. But she's beholden to them for funding Rory's prep school education and loaning her the money for Yale. Gilmore Girls is in its fifth season. The third season has just come out on DVD. In this scene from the third season, Rory has just come home to Connecticut after spending the summer in Washington, D.C. Lorelai is played by Lauren Graham. Rory is played by Alexis Bledel.
I'm so glad to see you.
No, I'm glad to see you.
I'm never leaving home again.
Oh, that's my emotionally stunted girl. Hey, I got you gifts.
What? I'm the one that left town. I'm supposed to get you gifts.
Oh, but I got here early and there was nothing to do except feed gummy bears to the bomb-sniffing dogs, which apparently the United States government frowns upon.
You got in trouble with the government while you were waiting for me?
Just a little.
How much is a little?
Learn Russian. Okay, here you go.
Wow, a Hartford, Connecticut sweatshirt.
Nice, huh?
Hartford, Connecticut notebook, Hartford, Connecticut pencil set, Hartford, Connecticut shot glass.
And beer mug.
Hartford baguette, Hartford bear, Hartford sunglasses.
You like?
I love.
All right, let's go. We'll get your bags and we'll hit the road, and then I can't wait to hear all about Washington. And by the way, I got you out of dinner with the Gilmores tonight. I thought you and Dean might enjoy a little peaches and herb time together.
Oh, thanks. What'd you tell him?
That you get home tomorrow.
Big fat lie.
Yes, which proves how much I love you. The fact that I was willing to lie to my own parents, who I never lied to, just so you could have a night of happiness, is proof positive of my deep, undying devotion that I have for you.
I appreciate that.
Before creating Gilmore Girls, Amy Sherman Palladino wrote for Roseanne and Veronica's Closet. I asked her about creating the characters of Lorelai and Rory.
At the time that I put Gilmore on the air, teenage girls on television, in my view, were reflected in sort of two categories. They were the pretty cheerleaders who were popular but secretly anorexic, or they were the angry, dark-haired Doc Martin-wearing disenfranchised girls who hate the cheerleaders but secretly want to be the cheerleaders. And there didn't really seem to be any room in the middle. There didn't seem to be any room for the girl who, you know, wasn't having sex at 12 and a half and wasn't dressing like a whore and wasn't, you know, dying to be popular, or there wasn't a girl who was sort of comfortable in her skin and sort of had her life and didn't really belong to any group and was kind of okay with that, and that books and reading and education and her future was the most important thing, way more important than boys. It just felt like, where's the other girl? So it was also a real chance for me to put that other kind of teenager on television. So you almost work backwards from that. What kind of mother has this kind of kid? And it obviously had to be a very smart woman, a very bright woman. You wanted to get them close in age because that's how you sort of bridge that gap. And, you know, Lorelai never felt like her parents understood her, so she wanted to really make sure that this kid felt understood, respected, nurtured, and free to be whoever it was she was going to be.
The Gilmore Girls is famous for its fast and witty dialogue. The dialogue is so fast that from what I've read, there are many, many more pages per episode of The Gilmore Girls than for the average hour-long TV show. So why did you start writing that way, you know, with an emphasis on fast, witty dialogue?
When I'm with my friends, we almost talk over each other. We, you know, and especially when there's a connection with somebody and you know them, you can anticipate where they're going. And for somebody like, you know, a mother-daughter like Lorelai and Rory, they almost have the same brain. They're going to finish each other's sentences. The speed of their speech almost indicates a little bit. It tells me a little bit about who they are and how close they are. I also personally believe that comedy works better fast. I think that all of the comedy that I admire, you know, the Spencer Tracy, Katharine Hepburn, you know, there wasn't a space of air between those people talking, and you loved them, and it felt natural, and it felt real, and it moved, and you were energized, and an hour and a half, you were, boom, you had some entertainment, you went out for a cup of coffee. It was perfect. You know, the old Woody Allen movies, you know, was the same way. You know, people just talked over each other. Sometimes the camera couldn't even get to them. Four lines were off camera. I just personally feel like comedy dies slow.
Another thing that the Gilmore Girls is famous for is lots of references to pop culture, books, movies, TV shows, recordings. Every minute there seems to be a reference to something. So let me just play an example of that. This is from the first season, and Lorelai and her daughter Rory are in the car together talking. Here we go.
Why didn't you mention the dance?
Because I'm not going.
Oh. But why aren't you going?
Because I hate dances.
Good answer. Except you've never actually been to a dance.
So?
So you really have nothing to compare it to.
No, but I can imagine it.
It's true. However, not really. Since you've never actually been to one, you're basing all your dance opinions on one midnight viewing of 16 Candles.
So?
So you should have a decent reason for hating something before you really decide you hate it.
Trust me, I'll hate it. It'll be stuffy and boring, and the music will suck, and since none of the kids at school like me, I'll be standing in the back listening to 98 Degrees, watching Tristan and Paris argue over which one of them gets to make me miserable first.
Okay. Or it'll be all sparkly and exciting, and you'll be standing on the dance floor listening to Tom Waits with some great-looking guy staring at you so hard that you don't even realize that Paris and Tristan have just been eaten by bears.
What guy?
Okay, so we got at least two different songs in there, plus a movie. And those are the more overt references. I mean, like in one episode that I think you wrote, Lorelai is, I think she's at her parents' recommitment ceremony. Mm-hmm. And there's a photographer coming, and someone says, oh, the photographer's coming. And she says, I am a camera. Christopher Isherwood reference. And then in a recent episode, Lorelai's boyfriend is changing his mind about something. And she says, my mother, my daughter, my mother, my daughter, a reference to Chinatown. So, you know, the references are sometimes overt and sometimes, you know, they just go by and you don't even know if it's a reference or not. So how did you start just kind of sticking in so many? How did it become a thing?
Well, you know, it became a thing accidentally. It wasn't, you know, I didn't sit out to say, and we're going to be the pop culture reference show. You know, here's my card. It just sort of happened. It came out of, you know, these are modern girls. You know, references are all around them. they read a lot. They listen to a lot of music. They watch a lot of movies. They watch a lot of television. And it's just, you know, it's going to seep into their vocabulary. It's going to be part of their brain. I personally talk like that a little bit, and then it just got fun. You know, the most fun was when, because the studio network have been so great about it, but they did once ask me to take out an Oscar Levant reference, because they said, no one here knows who Oscar Levant is, and no one on the WB, watching the WB, is going to know who Oscar Levant is. And I said, maybe three kids are going to go back and find out who Oscar Levant is. And they're going, there's not three kids who are going to know who Oscar Levant is. And I was like, I won't take it out. And I fought so hard for my Oscar Levant reference, and I won. And I felt so empowered that I just figured, oh, now all bets are off. Now it's open season, and we just really enjoy it. We don't even think about it. And sometimes we wind up taking references out, because by the time the scripts are done, it's like, it's holy moly, that's a lot of references. So we wind up stripping some of them out.
One of Rory's friends, Lane, is a character who really loves music and pop culture, and she kind of defines herself and other people by their taste in pop culture. Can you talk a little bit about her creating her?
Well, she defines people definitely by their taste in music. Lane is based on my best friend, Helen Pye, much to Helen's chagrin. Helen is this adorable Korean girl who was raised in a very traditional Korean, very strict Seventh-day Adventist home. And she was purely an American kid. Rock and roll, Duran Duran fetish, just really like as rock and roll as they come. But she was raised in a household that didn't allow rock music or dancing or jewelry or, you know, very, very strict. And she had to sort of carve out a secret life for herself. She had all of her posters were up in her closet because she couldn't put them out because she couldn't have her parents see them. So, and she loves her parents very much and respects her parents very much. So this hiding, this music obsession was not about rebelling. It was about trying to be respectful, but still trying to have a little bit of her own self. And I always loved that concept because Helen has one of the best relationships with her parents of anyone I've ever met. She sees them all the time. She just adores them. And I wanted to do something similar when I created Lane. And then eventually, of course, she grew up, so it all came out, and now she's in a band. And, you know, Lane is one of those people that really, music is her life, and good music, quality music. That's basically what Lane is. And Lane became our real music focus of the show to really get sort of our music opinions out there in the world.
My guest is Amy Sherman Palladino, creator of the WB series Gilmore Girls. Here's a scene from season 2 when the character Lane finds her calling.
I'm going to be a drummer.
You're kidding.
I went into that new music store today. I don't know why I went in. I just had to. Something told me, Lane Kim, there's something in there that you need to see. And there it was. And it was red and shiny and so excited I can't breathe.
That's amazing.
I know.
But how are you going to do this?
I don't know.
How are you going to buy a drum set?
I don't know.
And even if you do buy a drum set, where are you going to play it?
I don't know. I don't know any of this, but I will figure something out because I am Keith Moon. I am Neil Peart. I am Rick Allen, with and without the arm, because I am rock and roll, baby. I'll call you later.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Amy Sherman Palladino. She's the creator and executive producer of The Gilmore Girls. She's also done a lot of the writing for the show. We've been talking about the relationship of the mother and the daughter on your series. What about your relationship with your mother? What has that relationship been like? Would you compare it to any of the characters on the show?
My upbringing was very, very different. I my father's a comic. My mother was a musical comedy Broadway dancer who came out here and then had a children's theater group and trained me a lot in that, and she's now got her one-woman show, and she's back out there strutting her stuff. So I grew up in a much different sort of, a little bit more hippie sort of comic sitting around, you know. I didn't go to college, so education was not at all stressed in my household at all. It was more about, you know, dance class and get to auditions and drama log and things like that. So I think that everybody has universal problems with their parents, and there are times where I have found myself in a Lorelai Emily situation with my mother, simply on the fact that we're having a conversation and we seem to be talking at each other, not to each other. But it's just a completely different situation. My parents are, you know, they're still in the same house that I grew up in, and I just saw them last week, so we're cool.
What are their names? Might we recognize their names?
My dad's name is Don Sherman. My mom's name is Mabin Hughes. My dad is currently king of the cruise line. He's Mr. Saturday Night. He does stand up on the cruises, and he's gone like 110, you know, months out of the year. It's astonishing to me. It's great. You know, they travel all over the world, and he's a very, you know, my humor comes from my dad. It comes from flat out from hanging around a house where comics hung out and made each other laugh for a long time. You know, I grew up on this, so it was sort of, you know, I have zero other skills. I have no other way to support myself. So if this didn't pan out, I was in a lot of trouble.
So did your father actually tell you how to tell a joke? Did he actually, like, criticize you when you would tell a story or a joke and give you suggestions about how to make it sharper?
No. It's something you absorb. You listen. I grew up on, you know, the 2,000-year-old man albums, you know, Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner because my dad had them, you know, and Lenny Bruce because my dad had them, and, you know, Bob Newhart albums because my dad had them, and comics hanging out at my dad's house, and that sort of that Jewish kind of New York rhythm, even though I was, you know, born and raised in the San Fernando Valley, you know, it's something you sort of absorb and you can't get rid of. My dad, however, did teach me that in television, it's all about the pitch. If you go into a room of executives and you make them think you know what the hell you're talking about, even if you don't, you're done. You're golden. And he's absolutely right. You talk a lot. You make them laugh. You leave. You know, maybe they have no idea what you said, but you sure seem sure of yourself. It's worked very well for me.
Is that how you got the Gilmore Girls?
The Gilmore Girls was a complete freaky fluke because I went into a pitch and I had like four ideas very well thought out, you know, and I'm pitching them and they're bored and their eyes are glazing over and they're looking at their watches and they're thinking about their lunch meetings. And then I said, and I have this last idea. It's kind of like a, you know, it's like a mother and daughter, but they're more like friends and mother and daughter. And they're like, that's what we want. And that was the pitch. I sold it. And I walked out of the room and I went, I have no idea what that is. I don't know what I sold. Well, what does that mean? Where do they live? What do they do? And people are like, oh, you got to come up with that. So I turned to my husband, who's a writer, and cried. And he said, well, we're going away for on vacation. And we went away and we stayed in this beautiful inn in Connecticut, the Mayflower. And it was like, oh, she should work at an inn and she should live in Connecticut. It just all sort of happened on the trip. So it was a very unusual situation.
So you were married to your husband, who is also an executive producer on the Gilmore Girls, before the Gilmore Girls got started?
Yeah. I bagged him early, you know, because got to bag him while your ass is still holding up, you know. As soon as you get that show and you become a little chair-shaped down there, it's not as hard to bag him. But, yeah, he's just a genius writer. He was actually on Family Guy at the time that I got Gilmore Girls on the air, and I was so desperate to have some help because my writing style was just very specific, and it was very, and I just saw these stories so clearly, and I always wanted people to break girlfriend stories, not mother-daughter stories, and that was very hard for the writers I had at the time to understand or comprehend. There was a lot of morals being tacked onto the ends. It's like, no one needs to learn a lesson here. Let's just entertain people. So I would call my husband over at Family Guy, and I would say, I would break stories with him over the phone while he's working for another company and another show. And God love Fox. They were very nice. They let him write a couple of scripts for me. And, you know, it was very hard that first year without having that help. And the second year, I begged him to leave, and he did. He came over, and he's been with me ever since. And it's just been the greatest working experience of my life.
Well, you're lucky because it's not always easy to work with a spouse.
Well, you know, hour long is very different from half hour. Half hour, I think we would have killed each other with sledgehammers a long time ago, because half hour writers sit in this room for hours and hours and hours, and the room smells bad, and they eat in that room, and it's horrible. And in hour long, it's a lot of solitary work. It's you break your stories, but then you're writing, or you're in an editing room, or you're on stage, or you're in a sound mix. So it's a lot of, there's so much to do in running the show that we can actually go, you know, days and we don't see each other till dinner, you know, and our offices are right next to each other. So it's perfect. It's the perfect working environment. It's absolutely delightful.
Why is an hour show a more solitary experience for writers and producers than a half hour show?
Well, because unfortunately, and I don't agree with this trend, and I think it's not a good trend, the trend on half hours has become get as many possible people together in a room. So there's like these enormous staffs of people, and just have them constantly pitching jokes, and a lot of the scripts, one writer, you know, it used to be you'd break a story, one writer would go off and write a script, and then that script would, when it was done, would come back to the room, and everybody would sort of pitch jokes on it to punch it up. And nowadays, a lot of shows don't even have a writer go off and write a script. They just sit in the room and they write the script together in what's very charmingly called a gangbang. And it's just, it's a lot of voices. And the thing about comedy is, just because you got 20 people in a room, it may mean you have 20 extra jokes, but it doesn't mean that script's going to be any better. If anything, it waters down the process. The more voices there are to pick from, the less focused, I believe, stories and scripts are. And if you look at some of the classic shows, Taxi, Cheers, Mary Tyler Moore, All in the Family, they were smaller staffs, they were more focused voices, and people wrote. And so, you know, to me, when I got to hour long, I got to write again. You know, I got to really sit in the, when I was first on Roseanne, it was the old fashioned traditional method of doing sitcom. And by the time I left Roseanne, I was there for 4 years, they were gangbanging every script. So it's to me, you know, so you're breaking a story, but then at the end of the day, you get to go off by yourself. It's you and your computer. And in my case, a lot of old Buffy DVDs, because too much silence makes me crazy. And I just write, and I just write the script by myself, and it's up to me. It's scarier, but it's a lot more satisfying.
Amy Sherman-Palladino, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
Amy Sherman-Palladino is creator, executive producer, and writer for Gilmore Girls, which airs on the WB Tuesday nights. The third season came out on DVD this week.